If you're thinking, I should go for a run today, but it looks like it could rain, Sierra says save on epic rain jackets. If you're also thinking, but I can't go out in these beat-up old running shoes, Sierra says save on top-brand running shoes. And if you're still thinking, but I'm also busy performing brain surgery, well, then we say, you really should have led with that. Sierra, let's get moving to your local store, like now. Go!
Hello and welcome to episode 248 of What Most People Think, and a hell of a lot has happened even since Friday's breaking news episode, which was in the midst of the local and mayoral election results. And it's fair to say that it got a lot worse for Little Rishi after that. Little Rishi in his, he didn't have any other reasons to get in the Rishi copter, did he? And fly somewhere and piggyback somebody else's success, because there was none. Andy's street lost, and the overall picture was a desperate night for the Tories. But somehow, there doesn't seem to be any leadership challenge brewing. So we're going to talk about all that. We'll also be talking about Bud Light, who've come out and said that after their failed promotion with Bud Light and trans influencer Dylan Mulvaney, they say we're going to stay in our lane now, which I think is interesting. We'll be wondering if that is now a trend. And in the Patreon only, we're going to be talking about the return of religion. There have been some big social sort of influencers and celebrities that are being quite sort of open about becoming more faith-based. And we're just wondering, is that coming back in fashion, you know, like flares? And I am sort of recovering from Sunday when I went out. So I don't know if I've told you, this year I've been married 20 years. And that gets a reaction probably based on my understanding of my listeners. A lot of you are going, well, that's just rookie numbers, Norcott, rookie numbers. Well, I was telling people on tour, and I'll tell you now, is that we are renewing the vows. I'll just give you a second there to be furious, because a lot of the blokes will be going, for fuck, Jeff, come on, man. You're just creating reasons to spend money. And a lot of the women probably thinking that I've had an affair. Have I said this on the podcast before? Maybe I have, but that's the general reaction that we get to it. But the place that we met was the Camden Palace in Camden, Jeff, obviously, now called Coco, but we refused to call it that in the same way. I can remember when my parents, you know, when a nightclub would be called like Caesars in Streatham, and they'd be like, oh, that's called the Cat's Whiskers. You know, I've become that old bastard. And they had a night on there exactly a month out from when we are renewing our vows, which was the night we met. Oh, there you go. Some of you literally going, Jeff, if you talk about this for one second more, I'm turning this fucking podcast off. But anyway, look, we had a good fun there. It was Peach, the 25-year renewal anniversary. I don't know. Reason for middle-aged ravers to fucking strap on their glow sticks one more last time. And it was, I mean, I love a bit of day raving, right? This was, it started at midday and it was done by 8 p.m. Literally 8 p.m. The lights came on and they were like, people, go home and relieve your babysitters. Not in that way. All right, new patrons. If you are a patron of this show, you get the show early, ad-free, and with bonus content. And I haven't mentioned for a while, you get my whole of my last tour show special, I Blame the Parents, and that's available. It's the only place where you can see the whole show. I think there's a much shorter version up on YouTube, but if you just start off at £3 a month, you'll be on the board for all those benefits. And we've got a few, because we've had the first of the month, we've got a few who I think are returners here. So we've got Cherry Bear, is that one of those original, you know, when we all set up on Instant Messenger back in the day? All the girls give themselves pretty little names. I'm going to call myself Cherry Bear. Mandy Haslam, that is definitely regional head of HR, Mandy Haslam. You're going to have to talk to Mandy Haslam. Mandy Haslam, yeah, she's in the office Mondays, Tuesdays and Fridays, and then she sort of roams the area just shooting, fucking kneecapping people. They haven't filed their reports. Jason Elliott, I don't know why, just sounds incredibly Aussie there, Jason Elliott. Or maybe one of those seam bowlers that played for Australia when they were shit. You know, in Australia they have those rare periods where they're shit. Jason Elliott came in and took a few wickets, actually, took a hat-trick at the MCG, but I retired at the age of 32. To wrestle crocodiles. Jim Nolan. I mean, that fucking sounds like an Aussie name. I think Jim is a returner, though. Also got Jim Donnelly. Jim. I mean, just the moment you're called Jim, you already sound like we're almost friends already. I mean, being called Jimmy, I always think anyone called Jimmy just sounds like your mate, you know? It's like Alfie, Jimmy, Jim, or Jim Donnelly maybe sounds like a Northern Irish sports commentator. Hi, I'm Jim Donnelly here, commentating on the Glens against fucking Lindisfarne. I don't know. Is there another Northern Irish football team called Lurgan? I don't know. Anyway, Jim Donnelly, Michael Hinchcliffe as well. Michael Hinchcliffe is another sort of sporting sounding name, or am I thinking of the Man City left back, Andy Hinchcliffe? I tell you, it's one of those names that becomes so different if I just call you Mickey Hinchcliffe. Mickey Hinchcliffe, suddenly he's sitting there with Joe Pesci and Ray Liotta on the table at Goodfellas. Hey, it's fucking Mickey Hinchcliffe. Michael Hinchcliffe is just, you know, Michael Hinchcliffe might be one of those Tories that's going to lose his safe seat at the next election, but Mickey Hinchcliffe, oh my God, Mickey back in the day, Mickey, he had dames falling off of him. Domain Talking Point, our super patron, David Domain, who I'm very grateful. He listens to every week and he emails and picks me up on things and helps expand, not picks me up, helps expand on ideas so we can sort of refer back to him and get a bit of clarity. And I was talking about the dilemma of getting rid of, you know, wanting to keep a good MP versus an undesirable party. A lot of people at the moment will want to get rid of the Tories at the next election, but there's also this thing of whether or not the person's done a good job for you, which we'll come on to in the politics section. But David refers to the mixed member voting system used in Wales, Scotland and London elections. Allows you to vote for a sitting member if you like him or her personally, but then allows you to vote against his or her party if you're not keen on the members they present. This system is also used in Germany and New Zealand. Yes. Yeah, is that like the list system? Did you say Scotland? Yeah, I don't know if they actually had it at this year's London mayors, or did they? Yeah, because they had the assembly votes as well. So maybe, you know, I'm not normally up for electoral reform, but I think I don't know how that would fucking work. if the person like wins their personal vote, but I guess you need to have two houses. But it's a weird system whereby there's always talk of the House of reforming the House of Lords until the other party get close to being in power and realise how fucking handy it is. So I guess on we go with first past the post. I mean, it's so funny. Do you remember that period where the polls were kind of stuck a bit, where, you know, Labour were about 4% behind and there was all that talk of a progressive alliance? Remember that? Rainbow Alliance, Progressive Alliance, and Labour were courting. They were courting the shit out of the Lib Dems, weren't they? Bless the Lib Dems. They thought they were in with a chance. But in the moment, the trust the fuck happened. 20 points ahead, Labour. See you later, Lib Dems. See you later. And Lib Dems trying to get Progressive Alliance trending again. You go, oh God, that was the best it got for us, didn't it? Since 2010, was that those 2 weeks where Progressive Alliance was trending on Twitter? What most people think. Okay, going to do a thank you and a fuck you. I want to say thank you to the film The Phantom Menace. It's really funny this, because blokes particularly of a certain age, you mention The Phantom Menace and they just go, oh, just the worst film. Just so rubbish. Because they sort of, they saw Star Wars as kids and then they went to see Phantom Menace and didn't really reflect on the fact that they'd become men since they've, you know, I'm not saying there weren't problems with The Phantom Menace, but they sort of said, well, I didn't feel like I expected to feel. What they really wanted to see was Star Wars again, really. They wanted to see stormtroopers, the same ships and stuff. And what George Lucas did was he tried to genuinely create a different story in a different point in time. And look, some of it didn't work, but because my son loves it. He loves it. So I've kind of got into it on that level. And I've also thought hating it has become like, it's almost like where that the hate for something kind of goes beyond its logical endpoint. Similar to the Tories in a way. You go, all right, you can, but like it's just become like a movement with its own momentum. Like the Tories or Coldplay or James Blunt once upon a time. But I thought he looked great. The CGI in some ways was better in 1999 than some of the recent DC Universe films. It looked great. The Coruscant, which is the planet that's one big city, it looked fucking unbelievable. But what I was reflecting on was how different it would be now, right? If this had all occurred in the modern age and George Lucas said, right, I'm going to do the prequels, I'm going to tell the story of the three previous films, would it even be about a boy? This is what like film execs alike now. George Lucas would have gone, oh, I want to do a film about Darth Vader, the character as a boy. And they're like, yeah, George, we like it. But does Anakin have to be a boy? We just kind of think it'd be, could Anakin be a girl? Oh my God, everybody. How excited would everybody be if Anakin was a girl who not only transitioned their sex, but also to a machine? It's the kind of shit they say. Could it be a girl, George? We'd just let you go away. Could it be a girl? And the three main characters, Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, and Anakin, they're very white. And Georgia would have been like, well, but there's also a green one, and Samuel L. Jackson's black, and going, you know, we don't not really count in the alien ones as non-white. Could Yoda be greener then? Could we make Yoda greener? I mean, it's funny because we act like woke is this recent thing, but there were examples of it before where things that played on social sensitivities caused problems. And there were issues at the time over the portrayal of Jar Jar Binks. A lot of people felt like he was a cartoonish representation of a sort of African stereotype, right? And I understand that, you know, like a lot of that, you do see the point from the vantage point of 2024. But here's a point they missed about Jar Jar Binks, right? And I'm fully nerding out now, is that he was from a race of beings called the Gungans, right? Very early in the film, Jar Jar Binks takes Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon Jinn to Gungan City, which is a fucking underwater city, right? It's incredible. They've somehow found a way of living underwater, right? And they've created this kind of wall, which is like a membrane that you can walk through, but it keeps in the oxygen. It's like Wakanda underwater. The Gungans were clearly geniuses, but oh no, just because Jar Jar Binks speaks in a way they didn't like, they completely overlooked the fact that the Gungans were, the in technology terms alone, the most advanced in the Star Wars universe. The fuck you is to the Met Gala. Now, this happened, I'm recording this on Tuesday before lunch. The Met Gala happened last night. I didn't realise that the Met Gala, I just thought it was a general fundraiser, right? I didn't realise the funds being made were for the Museum of Fashion. Like, it's all for the Met Gala. How much fucking money? I mean, apparently this thing raises about $20 million a year. And it all goes back into, how much money does a museum need? It's like, sometimes when you do it as a stand-up, you'll get asked by it. You'll get asked to do like a charity gig. And you go, like, I try and do a few of those a year, but you go, can I just check what the charity is? And they go, yeah, we're just trying to get a minibus for the school. And you're like, okay, what's the school? And they're like, oh, it's St. John's Heart. And is it a private school? Yeah, it's a private school. Okay. And you kind of think, wow, all that money. And it's for, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, what most people think, uk@gmail.com, but it seems like it's all for fashion. And it just, like, if you ever wanted to feel like the most kind of anti-establishment, fuck the cultural elites, just look at some of the photos from this shit, the stupid things that people wear. I mean, the actress Zendaya, who is incredibly beautiful and a brilliant actress, right? But the thing about Zendaya, they always say she's so shy. Zendaya, oh my God, I watch interviews, it breaks my heart how shy this girl is. Well, she wasn't too shy to wear a dress that had a fucking bunch of flowers on her head and a train that was about 15 feet long. Didn't seem too shy for that, to stand in front of the world's press. But she looks, I mean, she's Zendaya. This is the point, isn't it? It's almost like what the kids would call a flex, is to say, I am so naturally and unbelievably beautiful, I'm going to wear the dumbest fucking thing on my head and you're still going to all desire me. I think she did an outfit change as well. $74,000 a table, you know, and they all did that thing of where they make their points, you know, or certainly they used to be more political. And I thought what was interesting, right, was that this is like the World Cup for the liberal elite, isn't it? This is the fashion industry and you know, you'd imagine it skews fairly left. None of them mentioned the Middle East. Now, I'm not saying that they had to take a stance one way. I'm saying that no one seemed to take a stance either way. It's the big burning issue globally. It's the thing that the kids are most inventive in. And I thought at least one, but you know, they're more keen to keep their place at the Met Gala table than they are to take a genuine risk. You know, most of them went for the theme of sustainability. Oh God, that's a risk, guys. God, you're going to get absolutely slaughtered for that. What, you're saying we should recycle? Fuck me. They were saying that on Blue Peter in the 90s. Okay, The Phantom Menace, the Met Gala. What's going on, Jeff? Fuck's sake, talk about some politics. All right. Okay, so it was bad for the Tories on Friday, and it ended up getting a lot worse for Rishi. But there's no leadership plot to oust him. Suella, she appeared on Laura Koonsberg on Sunday, and she said that, one memorable phrase actually, she said that she just had seemed annoyed about the fact that Labour are going to lose to a fairly feeble, the Tories going to lose to a fairly feeble Labour Party. And she said that Keir Starmer had the charisma of a peanut. And it's kind of a funny line in its own way, surprising coming from Suella. She's not exactly a fucking bantamobile herself, but I kind of thought, I don't know, peanut is one of the more characterful nuts, I would say. You know, it goes to pubs, you know, people like peanuts. I maybe wouldn't have picked a peanut. What nut would you have picked? What was those fucking ones, the ones at Christmas that were always... Well, the Brazil nuts were always left, but that was just because they were hard to eat. But they're very rewarding, the Brazil nuts. What's the one? Almond, hazelnuts. I mean, all nuts, you know, because they're nutty. Maybe she shouldn't have picked a nut at all. And it was quite funny because she was sort of saying, well, we as a Conservative Party, we need to pull together, while saying that she regretted voting for him and that he basically lied to her. But let's pull together. It's the time for criticism against the unsatisfactory leadership of Rishi Sunak has got to end. And it was funny, wasn't it? Because right till very late on Saturday, the Tories were holding on to the idea that it could have been worse. It could have been worse because they thought Andy Street was going to win. And it was, I think, a big shame. I think this guy's got a lot to offer frontline politics. I hope he sticks around. I know that there are people living in the West Midlands who aren't happy with aspects of the job he's done, but my God, he can communicate, right? And people seem to like him. I mean, that is already sets him apart from most of his contemporaries. And, you know, even the Labour guy looked a bit embarrassed. He just like, okay. Well, look, Andy, because normally in this situation, I'd slag the other geezer off. He's fucking, are you mental? You voted for me? It's fucking Andy Street, mate. You lot lost it. And it was a very thin margin. So, you know, using the logic of the people's vote years, I think we need to go again. People didn't know what they were voting for. It's just you cannot conclude when it's that thin a margin. And let's be honest here, right? It was the reform votes. I think there's a reform candidate that kind of done for him in a way. And that might be the only crumb of comfort that the Tories take from this, is that they can say, well, vote reform, get Labour. But what if people, that's what they secretly want? It's like, I don't want to vote for Labour, but I sort of want a Labour government. And then Tories go, ha-ha, vote reform, get Labour. And they're like, cheers. So, you know, the Andy Street thing was an example of that weird thing that I was talking about in the breaking news episode, whereby the reason why I voted for a Conservative crime commissioner was because I thought he's doing a good job, you know, and a lot of people thought Andy Street was doing a good job. But people are angry with the Tories, so they want to go, right, we're going to punish you, and we're going to punish the national government by getting rid of something that was working at a local level. Which sort of feels like, you know, when you offer your kid something, but they're angry with you and they say no to it, even though that's what they want, but they want to confuse and upset you. So, do you want a chocolate, son? No. Okay, you normally like chocolates. Well, don't care. And it was a late blow for Rishi, who he must have been sitting there going, okay, fire up the Rishi copter. Yeah, I want to go there. And Andy Street's quite small as well. They would he might have even looked tall. I think that would have been it would have been win-win for Rishi. But I guess in a weird way, and let's think this through, because politics is always there's always an unintended nature of all of this. Is that if Street had won, you'd have gone, well, of course they're not going to go for a leadership thing here now. But now, Street didn't win and they're not going for a leadership coup. Is his position, oddly, slightly stronger now? Because it's obvious that the threshold for them to topple him is now fucking massive. And they lost, of course, the London mayoralty, which was odd because of that brief period where people going, Susan Hall could win. And going, yeah, but it's Susan Hall. I know a lot of people are furious with Sadiq, but Susan Hall was not a good candidate, you know? She was not a good candidate. And, you know, in the London mayoralty, for the last couple of times out, they had James Goldsmith, who ran a campaign that was very easy to criticise. I mean, it went hard on, you know, like, faith stuff, and it went hard on the kind of mudslinging thing. He was a decent candidate, but ran a very bad campaign. And then you had Sean Bailey-Am, who just didn't get the support and actually got very close this time. And then, I mean, if you look at it, someone like Susan Hall getting, what did she get, 35%? It does suggest that if they'd have put someone decent up, they could have won. Boris. What? You know, you said I didn't. Could have put up Boris. No, stop it. Stop it. And so Rishi, everything was lost, right? They lost the mayoralties. Apart from Ben Houchin, I've got to say, though, in a sort of a weekend where Labour were winning everything, how did the Labour candidate that didn't beat Ben Houchin feel? Like the way when you win in a penalty shootout, but you're the one that missed. You're like, oh no, you can still have a sip of the champagne. Not too much though, because you did miss. But I suppose Sadiq was a sort of metaphor for what's happening with Labour more generally. It's very hard to gauge, is this a popular person, right? I mean, turnout was down in the London mayoralty election, down from 42% to 40%. It's not a massive drop, but it is a drop. So he wins a majority, you know, fraction of actual Londoners, right? So it could be that Sadiq is both very unpopular but not popular. And it could be that Keir Starmer is both not popular, but popular. If you know what I mean? This ain't 1997, is what I'm saying. It's not 1997. So everyone always reads with local elections. They basically take what they want from it, right? It's a bit of a curate's egg. That's the first time I've ever used that phrase. I don't even know if I got that right. What the fuck is a curate's egg? Okay, I just had to Google that, and it turns out, it seems I might have used it correctly. A curate's egg is something that is partly bad and partly good. So this is the angle that Rishi went for full curate's egg, right? So he's out there saying, well, if you look at the overall vote shares, you know, Labour are not on course for a majority. When you crunch it down, I think Labour got 34%, Tories got 25%. So Labour underperforming their kind of voting intention polls, and Tories slightly overperforming theirs. Now, there's a lot of talk as to whether or not you can really compare these two things, right? Because there's a lot of independence, there's a lot of sort of sectarian, factional stuff to do with Gaza. So whether you can extrapolate that or not is highly debatable. And also, it's kind of like, it just shows the level of ambition that Rishi shrunk to, where he's going, look, guys, I think that we're still going to lose, but Labour won't have a majority. So, hey, yeah, silver linings. I mean, to use a cricket metaphor, it's a little bit like, we're going to lose by a lot of runs, but I think we can make them back again. I really think we could take this to a fourth innings. The point a lot of people made was there were, you know, you get independent parties and stuff, and people voting to make a point. And there's some odd coalitions here, because Gaza was a big issue in some predominantly Muslim communities. And the Green Party, I don't know if you saw this clip. So they had this guy, Mothin Ali, right, who stood as a Green Party candidate in the Gipton and Hare Hills ward in Leeds, right? He won more than 3,000 votes, and he declared that his election victory was for Gaza, essentially, and that Palestinians should fight back. He's surrounded by a lot of his mates, and they all seem to be very pro his cause, and likely Muslim too. And so he said, we will not be silenced, we will raise the voice of Gaza, we will raise the voice of Palestine. Then he shouted, Allahu Akbar. Now, I would have thought from the Green Party's point of view, right? They're pretty, they want to be tolerant, you know, it's like they're the least equipped party to actually deal with this on a discipline level, because they want to be so woke, but they're like, we just felt that, I don't know, you kind of were a Green Party candidate, and we kind of hoped that when you won, maybe you'd say something about clean air. I don't know. Look, am I just being a typical white person here? But it'd be nice to have heard something about the planet. That's it. Just, but you could have done the Allahu Akbar thing afterwards, but just externally, look, hey, call this my white entitlement, but it kind of felt like you only gave a fuck about Gaza, and the Green Party thing was just a convenient banner under which to run. Hey, call me a cynic. Okay, just a quick hype here. I am this Friday in Tunbridge Wells at the Tunbridge Literary Festival. I'm going to be talking about my book, The British Bloke Decoded, which is, it's a look at how British men are, really. It's a sympathetic stock take of the British male. You see, when we get a bit of bashing, I thought, fuck that, I'm coming out fighting, just like I did on Politics Live, and then was suddenly confronted from both sides. But so there's both funny bits in it, you know, why do men really like a curry, but also talking about male loneliness in middle age and why we don't, you know, go into detail with our friends about what's going on in our lives. I think if you like this podcast, you'll like this book. And if you want to hear me talk about it, you can come to Tunbridge Wells. The paperback of The British Bloke Decoded is coming out in less than a month now. So if you're looking for a Father's Day present, or you want to be bought it for a Father's Day present, go on Amazon, get the link, send it, buy it, do whatever. And just a reminder that if you want to see my show, The Basic Bloke, which the national tour finished very recently, I'm going to be at the Fringe for the last 5 days. That's how I'm going big dog styles now. I just rock up for the last 5 days. None of you fucking reviewers can try and hamper me, because by the time your stupid little reviews come out, I'll be on my way home. And unless they're good ones, in which case, just shout me and I'll help get the word around. All right. Okay, so Bud Light, you might remember about a year ago, was it? America's best-selling beer, Bud Light, which says it all really about Americans. No offense, but if that's your best-selling beer, come on, man. It doesn't taste of anything. America's like chocolate. America, the Hershey's of beers, Bud Light. On the one-year anniversary of trans influencer Dylan Mulvaney transitioning, they sent Dylan a case of bespoke Bud Light, right? And then this now blew up into a big controversy and a big backlash, which which did cost them money. You know, it was characterized as anti-trans. And I guess some of it that, you know, probably was. There was various right-wing commentators who jumped on it. Even Donald Trump jumped on it. But I think, you know, I guess at that point, there was just a lot of people that were kind of going, does Bud Light really need to have a position in the trans debate, you know, at all? Especially as Bud Light, where, you know, Budweiser itself is seen as being a kind of like all-American beer, you know, very mainstream stuff. Maybe it'd be like a left-wing brand like Lush sending Steven Seagal some guy liner. And who makes these calls? Who makes these calls? Are these people ever accountable? You know, is it another one of these situations where somebody in a boardroom, you know, and maybe they thought they were trying to do the right thing or be helpful. And in the end, does it help? It's another one of these things. It's like, you know, putting pronouns under Les Dennis's name. You go, well, has this helped anyone? Has this helped people in the trans community? Has it helped your company? If it hasn't helped either, maybe don't fucking do it. But, you know, it might have been somebody in the Bud Light boardroom and they're all there. And it's, you know, it's kind of like post the Great Awakening, as it's been called, in 2020. Everyone's a bit tetchy and someone says, I just think we've never used a trans influencer before. I think we, and everyone's going, oh shit. Some people going, I'm not sure that's a good idea. We're fucking Budweiser. Do you know what I mean? We're all American, USA. Should we do this? They go, yeah, I just think it'd be really cool. I just sort of think it'd be really toxic if we didn't do it. And everyone's like, yes, I agree. I was saying the same on the golf course. Golf course is the kind of thing, you know, that I fear I may not do if I don't agree now. I think absolutely we should. And you know, the phrase go woke, go broke has become a bit of a cliche in and of itself. But it was never more true than in this situation, right? Because what it seemed like, I think, to most people, and I can apply this to an American audience again, is you may have the hateful people. And no doubt this Dylan character got loads of trolling and, you know, it affected them badly too, right? But most people just sitting there thinking, could you not just fucking keep out of it, right? And so basically the reason I'm telling you this is because Bud Light have come out and said that they're now going to stay in their lane when it comes to social justice issues. And there was a great quote. One of their European CEOs said that their major learning was that people think, hey, I just want to enjoy Bud Light when I'm not having to think about all this. You go, yeah, you could have thought that right at the beginning. And you wonder if there is a sort of change around there where I guess the bean counters at various companies who've engaged on certain flag-waving, virtue-signaling positions are now looking at it in financial terms and gone, has this worked? Has this achieved anything, you know? Unilever have also had a bit of pushback as well, this huge brand, and some of their shareholders have accused them of virtue signaling using ESG. What is it? What does that stand for? Environmental and social good. So it's this thing that, you know, a lot of companies are trying to up their ESG score. But their shareholders accused them of trying to define a social purpose for Hellmann's mayonnaise, which in itself is pretty funny. It doesn't all need to have a great social good. It can just be a good mayonnaise. You know, it's the same way that Haagen-Dazs just is a good ice cream. Haagen-Dazs have not taken a position in the trans debate whatsoever. And it's funny how often these companies, you know, the search is maybe that they're thinking, could we get woke kids drinking Bud Light, right? But the calculation must always be, and this is purely from a business point of view, what if the people that already drink Bud Light then drink Bud Light less? Was it worth it?
What most people think.
Now, this sort of thing has also been happening in films for a long time, where you look at like the big action, sci-fi, superhero franchises, right, which have always been sort of supported predominantly by blokes. You know, they have a certain flavour to them. They're kind of macho, heroic, all this kind of stuff. And then to use the Kathleen Kennedy principle, who's one of the big wigs at Lucasfilm, and South Park did a brilliant episode on this where they basically boiled down her theory of everything is, can we get a gay black chick in it? Can we get a gay black? So every film's like, right, can we diverse it up? And, you know, some of those franchises are struggling now because it's that same principle. It's like, who already likes our stuff? Right, fuck them. They're always going to watch it. Can we go for a different audience? But the question's got to be, do that different audience, i.e. in this case, I guess women and woke people, do they want this? Do they want this? Or, you know, you look at a film like Barbie, which is tailor-made for a female audience, and it did really well. You know, it didn't have anyone. I mean, I'm sure that there would have been a Mattel exec somewhere going, could Barbie maybe fire lasers out of our eyes? Is that possible? Could we make Barbie a superhero? I don't know. And, you know, there's been a lot of shows and stuff where you can just feel the shoehorn. That's what I think the problem is. Is it when the public can kind of see the workings of people's logic, right? So you get Hulk and then you get She-Hulk. You just think, God, there's just somebody sitting there going, could Hulk be a woman? And I don't care if people might say, oh, well, there was a comic book about a female Hulk ages ago. I don't care, right? You know the logic is, it's like, well, we should have one of these. The same as when they did the female reboot of Ghostbusters. Rather than thinking, right, could we create new characters that inspire people? One of the reasons that The Hunger Games was so successful was because it was a new character. I mean, I know the books had been around for a while, but it was this new character. It wasn't like they just went back to Raiders of the Lost Ark and just went Indiana Jones. Well, Indiana sounds like a gender non-specific name. Let's make it a girl. So that's what I wonder now, is we're going to see that certain tides just receding a little bit toward, because society generally overcorrects, right? It was certainly a case for quite a long time that we didn't have enough diversity in adverts and films and stuff. And then there's this period of overcorrection and then it recedes. And then, you know, once those tides recede, people might just look and go, okay, Top Gun Maverick was really successful. They had a dude in there that could fly a plane and blow shit up, okay? The James Bond films that did really well had a dude in there that could fly shit and blow shit up. Barbie was really successful because it was centered around a female character and stuff that a lot of women already liked. I don't know, guys. I'm starting to see a trend. And Bud Light was always drunk by middle America, blue-collar men. Maybe Bud Light doesn't have to have a position on social justice issues, and we can leave that sort of stuff for the new punk IPA pilsners coming through. Okay, we've got a letter here. I haven't done one of these for a while. This is from Anton. Anton. Is it Anton Dubek? Oh, by the way, Anton Dubek, I saw him in Edinburgh once. What a showman. What a showman. Couldn't sing for shit, but didn't care. Genuinely a brilliant show. Check it out if it comes near. Good old-fashioned mainstream fun. I was there at the biggest arts festival in the world with all these plays, all these kind of like edgy comedy, and there I was sitting watching the bloke from Strictly. But anyway, Anton says, Jeff, as Liz Truss just won't seem to go away, but Theresa May is going away, who would win a fight between Liz Truss and Theresa May? That's an interesting one, that. You look at Theresa May, she's determined, you know, she's got, and let's just, you know, go physical on this, she's got rangy limbs as well, so she could just jab Truss all day long, you know what I mean? If she just kept her outside, she could jab away at her. I think Truss would come and try and work inside, maybe on the rib cage. Ah, this is fun. I haven't done this for a while. Truss would try and maybe work on the rib cage, but while she's down there, she's sort of vulnerable to sort of uppercuts on the chin. And, you know, it's tricky, isn't it? Because on the one hand, would she throw in the towel, Liz Truss? I mean, if her political past is anything to go by, she'd say, I'm definitely not going to throw in the towel, and then throw in the towel a minute later. But equally, she hasn't gone away since that. So she could be one of those people where Liz Truss, where Theresa May just keeps knocking her down. I mean, also, Theresa May, in her favour, she would have that dance into the ring, which the crowd would just love. You know what I mean? That would be really a bit of crowd-pleasing entrance. What music would they come into? I mean, we didn't say this was a boxing match, but Liz Truss, she'd probably, I mean, like, first up, Theresa May would come into some classical music, like Vivaldi, The Four Seasons. It would just fucking weird everybody out, but she'd still be doing, like, the ABBA dance. Liz Truss would come in with to like LL Cool J, Mama's gonna knock you out, I'm gonna knock you out. And I think it could go the distance, and Liz Truss would just refuse. She would refuse. She'd get knocked out, her own corner thrown in the towel, but she'd get up, she'd go, I'm ready to go again. She'd be like fucking Scrappy Doo. So I'd say it is Liz Truss to lose and then have to be restrained by local constabularies. Okay, that is it for this week's episode of What Most People Think. We'll be back with a guest episode next week. Who's on next week? Why don't we tell the people, Jeff? Tease and trail. Simon Evans is on next week, so we'll look forward to that. I've got time this week to do the reviews. If you leave me a review on iTunes, 5-star reviews, please, I will read them out. So I'm just going to get them up here. Always a risk. Then might be bad ones, might be good ones. So this is from Hulson. 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 Okay. Please have Ian Dale and Rachel Fairburn on more often. Yeah, a lot of love. It's always lovely to talk to Ian Dale. And Rachel Fairburn seems to have been a real hit. So we found a lady that could be a regular. So I'll give Rachel a shout and we'll do that again. This is from Matty Collins. Matty Collins 19. Jeff Norcott should be MBE. Never scared to say what his issue is and give his own opinion, regardless of the political side. Well, you know, I try my best, try to give it a bit of nuance, but yeah, it doesn't take fucking much to be edgy in this industry, matey. This is from Gary B65. Gary B. I bet there's loads of Garys in your group, isn't there? That's why you've had to go for a Gary B. Gary B, Gary C, Gary D. Nah. He does not feature on the main WhatsApp group. This is Gary B. He says, one of the best comics on the circuit, displaying his razor-sharp wit and mind on the perfect forum. And yeah, certainly what most people think. Yeah, well, that's very nice. I mean, was it now? I mean, to be fair, I was kind of banking on there being one critical one there, because it does just sound, in a weird way, like I'm kind of pleasuring myself with the compliments. But thank you for those. Obviously, if you do leave them, I will read them out. And I hope you have a great week. And I'll be back next week with the brilliant Simon Evans.
What must people think?